Disruption actually shouldn't be, in my viewpoint, a negative word necessarily. Industries are periodically disrupted by new technology, new business models. That is arguably a feature of our market-based economies here, and a good thing, because that's what allows us to continue to innovate and create anew.
Welcome to the Agile Digital Transformation Podcast, where we explore different aspects of digital transformation and digital experience with your host, Tim Butera, Content and Community Manager at AgileDrop.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. I'm joined today by Mike Lennox, award-winning professor, consultant, author, and speaker who teaches at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. Mike has just released a new book, which actually comes out on the exact day that we're recording this conversation, and it's called Strategy in the Digital Age, Mastering Digital Transformation. And obviously, today we'll be talking about the book, discussing the key lessons and points from the book. Mike, welcome to the show.
I'm very excited. And like you said, today's the big day, at least when we're recording here, when the book is officially released.
Yeah, it's a very cool little detail, as we just talked about before I pressed record, that we're recording this on the exact release date of the book. I don't think that this has ever happened to us. So yeah, very cool. Awesome to be here.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks again.
So one of the key points and one of the first things that you talk about in your book is how digital transformation is inherently changing the nature of competition. And I really want to talk about this for a little bit. What do you mean by this changing the nature of competition?
Yeah, I think for especially a lot of established organizations, when they think about digital transformation, they think about, you know, oh, do we need to be using the cloud? And how do we get our databases organized? Maybe put them in a data lake and the like. And all of those things are critical here. But I think what's sometimes missed is that a lot of times digital is having more fundamental impacts on, again, the nature of competition within different industries. It's changing your relationship with your customer, maybe changing the value proposition in some pretty significant ways. It's allowing for a kind of proliferation of new business models. Of course, you think about like the advertising models of a Facebook or a Google, but others as well. You see the rise of platforms in various ways that create value, but also create maybe more competitive threats when these platforms become so ubiquitous. We talk about deconstructing the value chain, where now there are all these kind of interesting opportunities for businesses, often that are digitally native, to kind of find niches that take, you know, away maybe some of your traditional value. And so all of these are kind of coming together in a way that are transforming industries. And for those firms who are proactive, creating kind of new strategic positions that they might be able to achieve in those markets.
And I guess like when it comes to like the major players in tech, I'm talking like big tech giants, I'm guessing that one of the ways that they handle competition is just to kind of bypass it through acquisition, right? As we see with examples like OpenAI getting acquired by Microsoft really early after like it got super big and everything.
Yeah, it's one of the things I worry about is that the kind of the traditional model of, grow, get that IPO, become another big player is being somewhat supplanted by this idea of grow, get acquired by one of the big tech companies, which might have longer term implications for innovation in tech. But I think, you know, more broadly, what I think about is the primacy of data. And so data, you know, some people have said, you know, data is the new oil. It is what's being used to drive our algorithms. It's being used to create this new value in many different ways. And so for the big tech companies, they've been very effective of gobbling up lots of data, a lot of it obviously on your kind of personal background in you know, usage of technology and the like. And that allows them to improve their algorithms, improve their AI uses and the like, and that kind of feeds on itself. And so one of the things that's happened with big tech is they're starting to kind of put tentacles out in a whole bunch of different directions, right? We see it in terms of the entry into media and entertainment by Amazon and Apple, and of course, Netflix there. We see it in terms of the financial services sector with Apple Pay and Google and the others kind of moving in that direction as well. So healthcare, education, you know, any number of sectors now are finding kind of tech, these big tech companies in particular, entering in.
Yeah, that sounds exciting on one hand, but a little bit scary on the other, as you just said.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the next thing that I wanted to talk about is digital disruption. And particularly, I'm very interested in why you're calling it the evil twin of digital transformation.
Yeah. Disruption actually shouldn't be, in my viewpoint, a negative word necessarily. Industries are periodically disrupted by new technology, new business models. That is arguably a feature of our market-based economies here and a good thing, because that's what allows us to continue to innovate and create anew. I say it's the evil twin of digital transformation, really for, again, those kind of incumbent firms who maybe have a solid position in the marketplace who suddenly find themselves threatened by digital transformation. And that's where the disruption side comes in. And so in the book, you know, I use a lot of the classic examples of companies that were once highly successful, who found themselves when facing digital transformation, ultimately, in some cases, maybe in many cases, going out of business. So the classic cases like a Kodak or a Blockbuster Video, and history is littered with companies who failed to kind of successfully digitally transform. And so that's the idea of digital disruption here, that it can be quite disruptive to the current status quo.
So it's like it's the evil twin, because, you know, digital transformation should be something that propels you forward, but digital disruption, if not approached properly, can actually doom you in a way.
Exactly. I think for a lot of established companies, this is the threat and the thing they're most worried about, as we're seeing this just proliferation and growth in digital technology.
But also returning back to an earlier point, like we said, that kind of the days of the traditional IPO seem to be over in this context. Another thing that came to mind was, I'm sure there are cases where the main goal, like you said, that the goal is to get acquired by a larger company, right? And that kind of invalidates the entire purpose and the entire mission and vision that you set for yourself. It can be honest if the intent was not actually to do something meaningful with it, but just to, you know, to swindle somebody into getting loads of money.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know if I'd use the term swindle. I mean, I think that model of acquisition as an exit strategy for entrepreneurs has been around for forever. And so it isn't necessarily new. I think it's just the balance of how many companies do we see emerging that are growing to be their own, you know, big tech companies, versus ultimately getting acquired by the existing big tech companies. And what I worry about, again, is I think we have seen other industries, when they mature, that might not be a great thing for further innovation. And that we'll see that kind of innovation engine that's been so clear for, especially in Silicon Valley, but in tech in general, will it start to dry up if we get, you know, a handful of big tech companies that are just so dominant that there's no room for others to kind of to grow underneath them there?
Yeah, that's definitely an important question, and it's something that we'll have to keep a closer eye on over the years as kind of this progresses further.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess this is the right place to talk about like the most important ethical and legal challenges that businesses need to keep top of mind if they want to kind of successfully digital transform and do this properly.
Yeah, and you know, this is such an important topic. It's one I put out an entire chapter just on kind of the social and political implications of digital technology today. I don't have any, you know, right or wrong answers, I think, to what the right choices are. My main message is you have to be intentional. As a company, you need to be thinking through, you know, what are you doing? What do you feel comfortable with? And what are the ultimate implications of that? And so I think something like data privacy. You know, what do you feel comfortable using data, especially personal data, to do? And clearly there are positive uses of personal data to create value-added services that customers love. We can't deny that. But there's a line there somewhere that we have to recognize that maybe begins to go too far. Look what's happening right now with generative AI. Mm-hmm. I think you see this almost play out in the public sphere with Google and Microsoft almost struggling to be like, we need to keep pushing on this technology. We need to keep pushing on these large language models. And we're also simultaneously very afraid of where this technology could go. And again, I wish I had like the right answer, like this is the regulation we need today, or this is what needs to happen. But I do think the intentionality is going to be really important. Really think through what are the impacts on different stakeholders? What are the possible negative consequences? How are you going to address those? And then ultimately, be very clear about what your values as an organization are. And again, are these actions ultimately aligned with your values? You know, I don't know how much Google still, you know, touts their do no evil, but that was their original, you know, kind of mission value statement. And I think, you know, as vague as that is, it's not a bad one. Are they doing evil or not? They need to be asking themselves that every single day as they continue to push on AI.
Man, yeah, that was very, very well put. And I don't think it's vague. I think it's actually it's a very clear mission statement. Just don't do evil. But what's vague is like the concepts of evil and everything around that and how that changes. And another thing about AI, right? And kind of tying back to some of the points that we already discussed, and I'm sure that, you know, both you and listeners will have already heard this point numerous times on different generative AI related podcasts. But, you know, it's like this paradox of AI innovation. We know that it's dangerous. We know that it has risks, but other people are doing it. So yeah. If we don't do it, that then we'll just be left behind even more. And if it really is such a dangerous thing, then we are the ones that should be kind of the stewards of it or something like that.
That's right. I mean, to be a little too cute, I like to say technology always wins. And what I mean by that is I can think of very few cases where it's just a decision, we're just going to stop this technology. We're not going to advance it anymore. What more often happens is institutional structures evolve with the technology. So take a classic example. When the automobile, the original automobile came, you know, around 100 plus years ago, what didn't we have? We didn't have things like stoplights. We didn't have, you know, rules of the road and speed limits and things like that. All of that had to evolve with the automobile to make it a safe technology to use. We're seeing a similar thing happen now with AV, with autonomous vehicles, as we move to autonomy, whole similar set of questions. I don't think the answer is, let's just stop doing autonomous vehicles. I think the answer is, no, we need to, again, evolve the institutions we have. Same thing with generative AI. Obviously, higher ed is an area that is very worried, and rightfully so, about what's this going to do and the way our students are going to do exams and the like here. But I've been an advocate here at our school saying, like, you just can't say no, right? It can't just be, the answer can't be, you can't use generative AI, period. We have to work with our students to understand the positive use cases and then set the boundaries about when you might not be allowed to use it, maybe on exams, for example. And I think that's kind of the natural trajectory for technology. Doesn't mean it's not fraught. And again, I think with AI, you know, the idea that this is a pretty powerful technology and it has broad implications. So this worry that there could be some real negative downsides to it, I think is we're right to be, you know, concerned and thinking about this.
A lot of really great points here, and I especially love your approach, since you know you are a professor and you know it's a first-hand take on a professor how students should be using AI, and really it's just using it properly, being aware of how you're using it, just not using it willy-nilly. And I'm guessing that, you know, as things progress, as things evolve, as you said, with the stoplights and crossroads and stuff like that, there will be more stuff institutionalized as we go and people will get more used to it. And that will just kind of feed into itself as we progress. Yeah.
When it comes to AI, I always like to say, again, I have to be clear, you know, I'm an economist. I'm not a computer scientist on the forefront of AI. But from those who are and whose opinions I trust, the idea that the, you know, AI is going to gain sentience and, you know, have the Terminator scenario is really unlikely, right? Like that seems like just hopefully the stuff of science fiction. But what should be equally scary is that our AIs are going to do exactly what we tell it to do. And, you know, that tends to be how it works. Like, what's the objective function we give? So one that I think we're already seeing and I worry about is creating a chat GPT or chat bot that's whole goal is to keep you addicted to it for as long as possible, right? So it can, you know, sell ads in the background and the like. And so this will be a conversational bot that will be honed to your particular interests and tastes and form a relationship, if you will. Like I worry like that could be coming down the pipeline pretty quickly. I think there's already people who are having, you know, lengthy conversations with ChatGPT and the like. Those are the types of things I worry about when it comes to AI, less the, like I said, the AI deciding to destroy humanity.
Well, I think that now we need to talk about this because I just recently, I don't think it's fueled by ChatGPT, but I recently watched or encountered some content about these romantic chatbots. And, you know, because of the rise of loneliness and everything that has been kind of even highlighted by COVID and everything, a lot of people are lonely. We're basically in a loneliness epidemic. And, you know, the ability to have deep personal connections and conversations with something that's just programmed, man, that's super scary and super worrying.
Yeah, and look, it's a continuation of technology trends we've seen. You could argue social media has obviously some of those same elements. I think what of the large language models are doing is they're just raising that addictive quality even further and being even just that much more personalized and seemingly having this connection. What is a piece of technology? And so, yeah, I think it is something to worry about.
Yeah, because with a person, with a friend, even when you're talking online, still the online communication has value because it's tied to like in-person real life communication and to the real person behind it. Whereas with a chatbot, the digital communication with a not really existing digital entity is all there is to it. There's like no substance behind it in this particular sense. So yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the main focus of our conversation today. I think this was a necessary detour. But the next thing that I really, really want to talk with you about today, Mike, is why is it so important to have the big picture perspective on digital transformation initiatives?
Yeah, you know, I use this analogy. I'm sure I'm borrowing it from someone else, but you can imagine if your AI efforts are about just creating efficiency or improving some of your business processes and operations, it could be a little bit like making the engines on the Titanic more efficient. And at the end of the day, you're still going to hit the iceberg. It's just a question of how quickly you're going to hit the iceberg. And so I'm a big believer, not surprising as a strategy professor, that strategy matters. And where you direct the ship is going to be critically important here. And then through my own work, you know, I've seen so many companies waste, in many cases, millions of dollars, maybe even more, on digital transformation efforts that lead to a lot of applications and the like that end up not really creating much value or not, you know, really helping the company achieve the position that they want in the marketplace. So you really got to start with that strategic positioning question. Where are you trying to go? Where are you trying to position your company? The other thing I hear a lot of and I worry about and I caution companies I consult with is they'll say things like, we want to be the Google of X. And my reaction often is, well, Google's going to be the Google of X. Google's much better positioned than you are for achieving that position that you think, you know, is where you're going to be going. And so it causes you to take a step back and reflect on, all right, what are our particular strengths? What do we bring to this competitive game that's going to allow us to be successful? That's a hard question for a lot of companies, especially those who have historically had success and maybe dominate a market space. But again, are looking at a world that could be radically different than the one they're currently operating in.
Well, Mike, this has been such a great discussion. I'm super excited by all your insights. I think that we did an excellent job of uncovering and talking about insights that you don't really get to hear everywhere during these discussions. And just before we say our goodbyes and jump off the call, I want to ask you a last question that will be kind of practical for listeners right now. So what should be the key lesson or the key lessons from strategy in the digital age for business leaders who are listening right now?
Yeah, and it kind of relates back to the point I was just making. I talk in the book about the digital transformation stack. And what I propose is there's kind of four levels to the stack. There's your digital infrastructure. So this is everything from cloud computing to maybe building a data lake, getting your data in order. Critically important. That then facilitates the next level of the stack, which is your data and analytic capabilities. And recognize that, you know, we all get excited. And I'm excited about like generative AI and the like, but there are, you know, even basic things like dashboards and the like that can be very helpful within the organization. And layered above that are what I would call digital applications. And so these are like where you're really creating artifacts, maybe internally, maybe an HR process system or a way of engaging your customers and the like. But at that top level, once again, is your digital strategy. And that was where really the first half of the book is about how do you envision where you're trying to go as an organization? And then everything else should flow from that. Once you decide, all right, here's a valuable position, Now let's think about the infrastructure we need, the analytic tools we need, the applications we need to develop. And then to really emphasize that this is a journey, not a destination. And strategy is not what's sometimes thought of as like, let's set this direction and then never revisit it again. In fact, you're steering all the time and you might need to pivot as the world evolves, but you got to have some sense of where you're going. And that's really the core point of the book. And there's a whole bunch of frameworks and the like to try to help companies and organizations think through how can they position themselves and what does it take to kind of transform to that position they're trying to get.
I think that there's an expression that might be a bit overused at time, but I think really applies really well here. Basically, you got to find your North Star, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Well, Mike, this is the perfect note to finish on. Just before we do, if people listening right now would maybe like to connect with you, like to learn more about you or learn more about your book, Strategy in the Digital Age, and order it, where can they do all that?
Well, first with the book, it's available through Stanford University Press, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all your favorite online retailers. And if you want to connect with me directly, I encourage you to go to my personal website, which is michaellenox.com. So Michael and Lennox, L-E-N-O-X.com, and lots of information there, including my own podcast that I have called Good Disruption, where we tackle different technologies in each episode.
Oh, man, I'll have to check that out as well. Thanks so much, Mike. This has been really awesome. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And well, to our listeners, that's all for this episode. Have a great day, everyone, and stay safe.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to check out our other episodes, you can find all of them at agiledrop.com/podcast, as well as on all the most popular podcasting platforms. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes, and don't forget to share the podcast with your friends and colleagues.